وإذا رأيت كرمك طمعت. Imam Sajjad is telling us how should we try to balance between these two. Oh Master, when I look into my record of sins, it frightens me. But when I look up into your kind generosity, I long for it greedily. And then, just as a kind of total servant would do, he says, فَإِنْ عَفَوْتَ فَغَيْرُ رَاحِمٍ وَإِنْ عَذَّبْتَ فَغَيْرُ ظَالِمٍ. Therefore, I know this, but if you forgive me, it will be the height of mercy. And if I am punished, it is not unjust. So, supplication is man's attention to God, strengthening the relationship of servitude and ubudiyyah. In this relationship, one side is God, the Exalted, and the other is his sinful servant. Now, the supplicant always sees himself between fear and hope. On one hand, when he remembers his sins, he is dumb and regretful. And on the other hand, when he thinks of the infinite mercy of God, he becomes hopeful, experiences a state of rapture, opens his mouth and beseeches God's mercy. The Imam alayhi salam also expressed these points in his 15 whispered prayers or munajat khamsa ashra. Ilahi irham abdaka al-dhalil dhal lisan al-kalil. O God, have mercy upon your lowly slave of silent tongue and few good deeds. And this fact has been mentioned in other supplication. Imam Hussein alayhi salam expresses similar points in Dua Arafah. Ilahi kullama akhrasani lu'mi antaghani karamuk. Oh my God, when my abjectness makes me dumb, your magnanimity makes me expressive. وَكُلَّمَا آيَسَتْنِي أَوْصَافِي. And when my miserable conditions disappointed me, أَطْمَعَتْنِي مِنَنُكْ. Your favors gave me hope.
شَهْرُ رَمَضَانَ الَّذِي أُنزِلَ فِيهِ الْقُرْآنُ هُدًى لِلنَّاسِ وَبَيِّنَاتٍ مِنَ الْهُدَى وَالْفُرْقَانِ فَمَنْ شَهِدَ مِنْكُمُ الشَّهْرَ فَلْيَصُمْهُ وَمَنْ كَانَ مَرِيضًا أَوْ عَلَى سَفَرٍ فَعِدَّةٌ مِنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرَ يُرِيدُ وَلِتُكَبِّرُوا اللَّهَ عَلَى مَا هَدَاكُمْ وَلَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it. And whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
Dear listeners, this is when true and complete kind of recognition shows its importance. The servant is supposed to have recognition. He has to be aware of his own sins. He has to know what he has done, and he must try to make that up. During the time of supplicating, during the time of invoking, he has to remind himself of what sinful acts he has done, and he must put them on the table before his Lord, knowing that he has single-handedly done all those sinful acts, and he has got no one else to turn to. He is confessing to them. But on the other hand, He is knowing God. He has come to God because he knows that Almighty Allah is known as the Merciful, as the Beneficent. And this is what causes the equilibrium and balance between khawf and raja. And this is what causes Imam Sajjad alayhi salam to say, أَدْعُوكَ يَا رَبِّي, O Lord, I invoke you, rahiban ra'iba, terrified, but at the same time, eager, rajiyan khaifa, I am hopeful, but at the same time, afraid. I am hopeful because of your mercy, and I am afraid because of my deeds. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah.
This is Saudi Arabia, where women have recently been allowed to drive cars. As part of the Crown Prince's social reforms, or sweeping social reforms, as it's usually referred to inside the kingdom. Yet the radius of these reforms has been exaggerated. The shocking case of Abdulrahman Al-Savan, a 37-year-old aid worker with the Red Crescent, proves that the reforms in Saudi society hardly exceed window dressing. As a political satirist, Abdulrahman Al-Savan would use a popular parody account to mock the Saudi government for a couple of years. Little did he know that Riyadh had already hired some agents inside Twitter to infiltrate into Saudi accounts. In 2018, Al-Savan was identified and arrested and stood trial. Now he has been sentenced to 20 years in prison plus 20 years more of travel ban.
I think that that what has happened reflects the insecurity of the regime, not insecurity from fear of, say, physical force or a military attack or something like that, but it reflects the fear that is there in. Inherent in the fragility of their egos, of the leadership's ego, as so they can't deal with any sort of criticism. And this is sort of a real common phenomenon with dictatorships across the world.
While Twitter has not revealed the identities of individuals who were possibly exposed in the infiltration, the connection between Sathan's arrest and the alleged breach in 2014 was first reported last year by Bloomberg. In addition to Sathan, human rights organizations said they have identified six Saudi citizens who've been arrested in connection with anonymous Twitter accounts they ran. This is Arij Al-Sathan on her brother's case.
My brother, unfortunately, was one of those targeted by the Twitter spies, or rather, you know, by the Saudi officials. Basically, he was he had an anonymous Twitter account, like many other Saudi people, and he was expressing his opinion. He was criticizing, you know, issues related to social justice, human rights. He wasn't actually that heavy in terms of his activism or even criticism. He didn't really have much interest in politics, but it was more of a personal expression. He just liked to express his opinion. And, you know, when you're actually following Twitter, especially in Saudi Arabia, it's easy for you to feel like, you know, you can't stay silent and you want to talk, you want to express, and it's something normal. It's a normal, human aspect.
Omar Abdulaziz, a Saudi dissident living in Canada and a friend of the slain journalist Jamal Khashoggi, said in an exclusive interview to The Guardian that the FBI showed him a number of exposed accounts following the breach, including an account used by Sathan. When I met the FBI, they gave me a list, and I saw a couple of accounts that had been compromised, including @Sama17. I think more than one person has been jailed because of this. @Sama70 is the parody account Sathan used to run.
The internet has become an alternate battleground, essentially, both for governments and for their oppositions. And so it's quite possible that the Saudis have the technological capacity to go in and survey the various elements within the internet looking for people who might express, you know, opposition in words or in pictures.
Abdulrahman Al-Sathan's stiff sentence came after a long period of disappearance. His family didn't hear from him for 23 months. When his father saw him for the first time, Abdulrahman's health had deteriorated after months of being held in solitary confinement. Critics say enforced disappearance is a stock and trade of Riyadh when treating its opponents, a crime out of control.
If you look at what happened to Khashoggi, all right, the journalist, and now with Sathan, it seems quite clear that their thuggery, if you will, is quite open, because they don't think that there's anybody out there who can hold them responsible. And so I wouldn't give them the honor of calling them a government, actually. They're a dictatorship and they rule by force, and their leadership is insecure in that position, and so they overreact to criticism.
The arrest of Sathan is part of a larger attempt by the Crown Prince to establish its foothold in Saudi Arabia as the next king. The crackdowns have seen Saudi authorities arrest senior royals, activists, intellectuals, and clerics. Strangely enough, as a political satirist, Al-Sathan was tried in the so-called counterterrorism court, a clear message to those who turn their pens against the Saudi establishment. In fact, Mohammed bin Salman has over and over again proved that writing against the government is a crime that carries an automatic life sentence or so. Saddam's family say he faced a secret trial at the same court that had initially sentenced women's rights activists Hussein al-Hathloul to nearly 6 years in prison. Shortly after the trial, MENA Rights Group tweeted, "We're appalled to learn that Abdurrahman al-Saddam was sentenced to 20 years in prison and a 20-year travel ban after a sham trial before the Saudi Specialized Criminal Court. He has been detained arbitrarily for over 3 years and deprived of his own basic rights."
They're saying, look, we are your masters, and so you don't mess with us, because we will destroy you, and we will even destroy your reputation within Saudi culture or the Saudi population, because we can label you a terrorist. Doesn't matter about the victim matching up with any normal definition. We will just arbitrarily call you a terrorist, and we will. And you will go down in history as we tell you, to go down. I mean, as we describe you. And so it's a warning, if you will, to others not to do this.
Al-Saddam's case is significant in another aspect. The heavy sentence came just as the Biden administration criticized Saudi Arabia for its poor human rights record. It shows that the Saudi de facto leader does not care much about what the world might think of his violations of human rights, and that the gruesome murder of Jamal Khashoggi was not just an accident, but the tip of the iceberg.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly, I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Since we are in the month of Ramadan, we are going to, in fact, hover around the questions around fasting and Ramadan, according to Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography. Thank you. little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and his teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Sheikh Javid, we are talking about fasting and Ramadan and the questions and the issues, in fact, released by Ayatollah Khamenei. And you kindly provide us the answers to those questions. Let me start off this episode with this question. Pregnant women, in yes. fact, sometimes fast. But if there are no, let's say, reasonable grounds to fear that fasting would harm them,
yes.
would harm both the woman. Expecting woman,
yes.
as well as her fetus,
sure.
all right, can they or can she break her fast?
Since there's no reasonable fear
mm-hmm.
that fasting is going to affect her health or that of the child, so she cannot break her fast. She must continue fasting, okay? But if obviously if one has genuine fear of getting her health or that of the child affected by fasting,
mm-hmm.
then that fear provides a person with legitimate reason and legitimate excuse to stop fasting and to start eating and drinking, okay?
Yes.
Much less being sure, okay? If you are sure that fasting is going to affect your fetus, or it's going to affect your health or damage your health or cause any harm, then there's no there's no reason to fast, and fasting becomes haram in that case.
Mm-hmm.
I see. And whether a woman is pregnant in the early, whether it is in the early days of pregnancy or whether a woman is at an advanced stage of pregnancy, it doesn't make any difference, okay? A pregnant woman cannot fast if she knows or if she fears genuinely that it's, that fasting is going to be harmful. And the same could apply, the same reason could apply to a breastfeeding woman. Okay, a breastfeeding right. woman,
mm-hmm.
you know, that woman who is suckling or giving milk to her child, if there's no one else and if there's no alternative food, okay, other than milk to give to the child, then that woman cannot fast if fasting becomes, harmful.
Yes.
For the woman or for the child. Mm-hmm. And if it causes, if fasting causes her milk to get reduced, okay, to a quantity which would not suffice the child, and as a result the child's health will be affected in that case, and there's no, for example, other person to let's say breastfeed the child, okay, and it's not even possible for her to hire another woman to undertake this responsibility and to take care of the child and give milk to that child, so in that case she can and she must break her fast to make sure that her health and that of the child remains unaffected.
Yes, to sum it up, in fact, any health risk
sure
would be somehow difficult, or it is the reasonable ground for the expecting woman to stop fasting, right?
You're right. And fasting is not permissible for a person who is not, let's say, pregnant or who does not have a child to breastfeed. Like, look at the example of an ordinary person, a man or a woman, okay, she's, for example, he is suffering from an illness, and let's say if he starts fasting, maybe her illness might get even worsened, and his poor mm-hmm. state of health might get even further complicated, yes. And it will make her recovery mm-hmm. even, difficult. So in that case, it's not permissible mm-hmm. for him or her to observe fast. Okay, if he cannot observe fast, then what is the Islamic standpoint or the Islamic Sharia viewpoint with regard to the fasting to an ailing person who does not fast? An ailing person who does not fast because of a valid excuse.
Yes.
Should give 750 grams of foodstuff like wheat, flour, bread, noodles, or rice, or things like that, to a poor person.
Yes.
To a poor person,
and that for should each happen day. At the end of the Ramadan, right? Yeah, the whole month.
Yeah, she can give it during Ramadan or after Ramadan because he's not fasting. So at the end of the day, he can give 750 grams of foodstuff. To a poor person, okay. To a poor person,
yes.
Okay, but he can also wait and give the whole amount to one person or to different poor people, okay. Because it's not a kind of kafara for breaking the fast intentionally. It is a kafara that becomes obligatory when a person is suffering from an illness, and it's not because of. It's not, and there's no intention involved. He did not break his fast because of disobedience to Allah, but because of obeying Allah, he is giving 750 grams. And 750 grams of foodstuff is equal to one mud, okay? One mud, because some people might use the term mud. Mm-hmm. Mud is an Arabic word which is equal to 750 grams.
I see. Thank you, Sheikh Sawi.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
What about coronavirus? Because we all know that COVID-19 has affected the whole world and has hit every town and village.
Sure.
Wreaked havoc in the world. Do we have, especially we are talking about the new mutated variant, which is much more contagious than its previous variants, and it's mutating so much, we all know that for sure. Do we have any fatwa, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, or issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, about fasting in these times?
Yeah, I did see his fatwa in this regard, and I think based on the what I understood from his answer,
right,
there is no difference between COVID-19 and any other illness. Okay, as long as a person has not caught that virus, and as long as he's up and walking, working, and he's running, and he's healthy,
mm-hmm.
he must observe fast.
Right.
And the disease being around you does not provide you with a valid justification to stop fasting, okay?
Right.
But of course, when you catch the virus and you get affected by this virus, you cannot fast if fasting becomes, if it delays your recovery, or if it is going to have a negative impact on your health, you cannot fast, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you have not caught the virus or you have not been affected by this virus, you cannot break your fast. You should keep fasting no matter how contagious the disease is. The disease is everywhere. It is. We can see that the countries, all countries, Muslim, non-Muslims, have been affected deeply by this new virus.
Sheikh Sawit, what is the Islamic law about taking shots? Does injection invalidate fasting?
In injections, there are two types of injections, okay? One is, let's say, intravenous, and
yes.
Of course, it can be said nutritional injection.
Yes,
okay?
Nutritious, yeah.
And the other one is muscular, let's say, is a kind of injection that is could be anesthetic,
mm-hmm.
anesthetic, okay, because it's kind of calmative.
Yes.
It brings it helps you feel less pain after getting injected.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as the nutritional injections are concerned, intravenous injections are concerned, Ayatollah Khamenei says that such injections are for shots will affect your fast. You should not take such injections which serve as food, as serve as nutrition to your body, and it's going to affect your fast, and it's haram. Okay,
basically it's functioning as a doping.
Yeah, sure. Because it's going to support you. It's supportive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as for the anesthetic injections or muscular injections are concerned, of course it's permissible, because it doesn't serve as food. It's going to calm you, give you relief, and it is absolutely allowed and permissible. And there's one thing I would draw your attention to. I would like to say to the to your audience that Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that all kinds of injections do not affect your fast, whether it is nutritional or intravenous or it is anesthetic. Mm-hmm. All of them are permissible, and they are not going to affect your fast. As far as Ayatollah Khamenei's response is concerned, I did mention that there are two kinds of injections. One is anesthetic and muscular, which is allowed, and the other one is nutritional or intravenous, which is not permissible. And of course, one has to take exercise precaution in such cases. I think that's Grand Ayatollah Khamenei's response mm-hmm. to your question.
Thank you very much. There are many more questions that I hopefully, and
inshallah,
God willing, I will ask you in the next episodes to come. Thank you very much for accepting our offer and coming to the studio and shedding some light on these questions related to this special holy month of Ramadan. If there is a cream of the crop for everything, if there is a bride for everything, I guess that Ramadan is the cream of the crop, the bride of all months that there are to it in these 12 months. So please keep us in your du'as, especially in this holy month. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Ya ayyuhallazina amanu kutiba alaykumus.
O you have faith, prescribed for you is fasting, as it was prescribed for those who were before you, so that you may be God-weary.
رمضان زمان الحسنات
رمضان زمان البركات رمضان زمان الحسنات رمضان زمان البركات رمضان
مجان الصلوات تسمو بالنفس لمولاها
رمضان مجان الصلوات تسمو بالنفس لمولاها
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Allah
الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا أبو القاسم المصطفى محمد.
Welcome to the month of Allah. The month of Allah is a month that we also can connect to the holy imams. Today is the birthday of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, our second imam. There's a beautiful story that Imam Hassan alayhi salam was with the Messenger of God. And in this story it mentions that the Muhajireen, the people that have migrated and were supporters of the Prophet, see the way that the Messenger of Allah loved Imam Hassan alayhi salam. He says about Imam Hassan alayhi salam that he is my son, my purification, the side of me. He is the delight of my eyes. And he begins to talk about Imam Hassan alayhi salam in a very beautiful way and shows his love. And then he takes his hand and walks with him. And it says in the tradition that the Prophet of Islam would not stop looking at Imam Hassan alayhi salam. And then he repeated these words in the tradition, إِنَّهُ سَيَكُونَ بَعْدِ هَادِيًا مَهْدِيًا, that he will be a guide after me. هَذَا هَدِيًا, he is a gift مِنْ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ, he is a gift from the Lord of the worlds. So Imam Hassan alayhi salam, that today is his birthday, that he is a gift for us, and that it is a seerah, it is the way that the Prophet of Islam lived, that he showed utmost respect and love for Imam Hassan alayhi salam. And we see this in different traditions about Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that he would refer to them as my two sons. In the second part of the tradition, something very interesting happens in the story. A man comes to the Prophet of Allah and tells him that I reject you, I don't believe in you. And the reaction that we see from the Prophet of Islam is amazing, that with compassion, with kindness, he has Imam Hassan alayhi salam, which is his grandson, come and talk to this man. Imam Hassan alayhi salam, what does he do first? He begins to recite some poetry, words of wisdom to this man, and begins to calm him down. The man gets calmed a little bit, a man that wanted to attack, and as we understand in this tradition, he wanted to even kill the Messenger of God. Imam Hassan alayhi salam calms him down. And then he uses knowledge of the unseen and tells him and shows him that you had evil plans, that you wanted to kill the Messenger of God, and your tribe would pay for the expenses of your family. The man gets surprised at how does this child know this. And he comes to the conclusion that he must be a holy person, a person that God has sent. Of course, that he is an imam and the Prophet is a messenger of God. There the person becomes Muslim, and Imam Hassan alayhi salam teaches him from the Quran. And this is the way that Imam Hassan alayhi salam guides. He takes the hand of a person that wanted to murder the Prophet of Islam, and through his knowledge, through his patience, through his kindness, guides him and makes him become Muslim. We ask Imam Hassan alayhi salam on such a day, that if you treated an enemy of Rasulullah with such compassion, that you take our hands and that you metaphysically guide us towards purity, you guide us in this holy month to make us, inshallah, of the followers of Prophet Muhammad and his noble family. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ahla baytihi tayyibin at-tahirin.
قالت فاطمة الزهراء عليها السلام: ما يصنع الصائم بصيامه إذا لم يصن لسانه وسمعه وبصره وجوارحه؟
فاطمة الزهراء عليها السلام said: What is the fasting person doing with his fast if he is not guarding his tongue, his hearing, his sight, and his limbs from sins.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
The light.
Large chocolate reproduction of Picasso's iconic painting of Guernica has gone on display in the Basque country town. A steady stream of residents has visited the artistic work created by 40 Basque chocolatiers. The work of art is expected to stay in Guernica until it tours different Spanish and European cities. The move marks the 84th anniversary of the bombing of Guernica in northern Spain by Nazi Germany. Picasso painted Guernica to portray the suffering of people and animals wrought by violence and chaos. Upon completion, Guernica was put on display at a Paris exposition in 1937. Lebanon has unveiled its first indigenously produced electric car, which is also the first ever car manufactured in the country. The red sports car Quds Rise is named after the Palestinian holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds, which remains under Israel's occupation. The car is adorned at the front with a golden logo of the Dome of the Rock, signifying the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. It's the project of Lebanese-born Palestinian businessman Jihad Mohammed.
We have two sources of electricity. There is the state's electricity that are the generators, so we pay to 10 recharging stations, and we are looking for secure places to install them.
The company hopes to start the production of up to 10,000 units of his electric sports car in Lebanon later this year. Jihad Mohammed says his long-term goal is to compete on international markets for hybrid and electric cars, as well as to make sales in Lebanon. In a remote part of Pakistan, two sisters have come up with a unique idea to help children continue their education during pandemic-related school closures: a camel library. The mobile library visits four villages in Pakistan's largest province of Balochistan. Children borrow books and return them the next time the camel visits. The project was founded by a local high school principal and his sister. Rahima Jalal says she started the project because she wanted children around her remote hometown to continue learning despite schools being closed.
When the coronavirus spread, the entire region and all the schools were closed. There was an atmosphere of depression for old and young alike. The region where I live, there is no entertainment for children at all, no place for outings. The only activity is the children going to school and coming back home. After the schools had remained closed for 8 or 9 months due to COVID, we started wondering what we could do for the children. How could we start some sort of activity which would keep children busy and also be of some benefit to them?
Pakistan closed the schools early in 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic and sent some 50 million school and university students home. The closures put children in Balochistan at particular risk of falling behind, as the province is Pakistan's most impoverished. Even though some schools have reopened, children in this region still have trouble accessing educational resources. NASA's Ingenuity Mars helicopter has successfully completed its third flight on the red planet while moving farther and faster than ever before. It was nothing short of amazing, says the Ingenuity Project's program executive. The drone covered 50 meters of distance, reaching the speed of nearly 2 meters per second. In its latest flight, the helicopter filmed 80 seconds of video, which are to be sent to Earth in the coming days. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration says similar flights are yet to come, with each planned to be of increasing difficulty in order to push ingenuity to its limits. The experiment will end in 1 month in order to let Perseverance return to its main task, searching for signs of past microbial life on Mars.
When spring arrives, nature is lively and in bloom. This generous season brings with it merriment for humans and animals alike, as they can freely enjoy the greenery. A herd of cows in Sweden have gotten their first chance to graze in green open fields after being cooped up in their farms for the whole winter due to the harsh cold. The event was broadcast live so people could enjoy watching these happy animals springing around. Sweden's traditional cow release ceremony attracts thousands of visitors every year.
Barcelona's famous Casa Batlló has been decorated with hundreds of artificial red roses on the occasion of St. George's Day, a Christian celebration also known as the Feast of St. George. For those in Catalonia, the floral decoration of Antoni Gaudí's architectural masterpiece means the arrival of spring. Many locals say that after a year of lockdown amid pandemic, the decoration seems like a recovery for them. Catalans normally celebrate the occasion in large groups outdoors, but this year, COVID-19 has prevented their traditional way of celebrations. However, they say Casa Batlló's roses have sparked a sense of enthusiasm that life is eventually going back to normal in some way.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A Dutch photographer has captured stunning footage of a super yacht passing through narrow canals of the Netherlands. Tom van Usanen used a drone to record the transportation of the gigantic vessel from its initial facility to the North Sea. The 94 meters long yacht, known as Project 817, is one of the largest vessels to be launched this year. It has been designed to precisely fit the waterways, and even a few centimeters cannot be added to its length or width. The duration of the yacht's transportation also depends on a variety of factors, including winds and the schedule of the bridges. For this super yacht, the mission took 4 days to be completed. Space radar capable of capturing small objects that threaten the safety of astronauts and satellites has been inaugurated at a farm in northwestern Costa Rica. The four large panels that make up the radar are connected to the servers of an aerospace company in San Francisco in the U.S. state of California. The system uses a continuous series of radio frequencies that bounce off materials in orbit and send information back to the servers. An American astronaut present at the ceremony says the radar is most advanced of its kind in the world.
Now this radar, which is the most advanced commercial radar for space tracking in the world, what it does is it sends radio signals into space. As Franklin said, even an object the size of a golf ball traveling at 30,000 kilometers per hour overhead, a tiny amount of those radio waves will bounce off it and can be picked up by these giant reflector dishes behind us.
Costa Rican President Carlos Alvarado also joined by American and domestic astronauts during the event. The radar can monitor objects that transit in low Earth orbit near the equator, an average or an advantage offered by Costa Rica's geographical location.
A museum in London has transformed its gift shop into a mini supermarket selling artist-designed food to help an industry largely affected by the coronavirus pandemic. The Design Museum has reopened its shop with the help of 10 artists. It sells essential products with packaging designed by emerging artists. The market offers goods at the same price of normal markets, both online and at a marketplace. The initiative is led by Camille Wallala, who says her project is aimed at supporting the artists reeling from the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, the project is to support artists, and I think because obviously at the moment there's no exhibition, people can't really show any of their creative work, and it's nice to have like a feedback when you're creative. It's nice to know, you know, if people like your work. I think this is a really nice platform to just bring artwork on like everyday product, and actually people are going to probably come and just buy them and probably keep them as a piece of art, like, you know, an affordable piece of art from some artists that you like. I think it's a really nice way to display art, so yeah, I think.
Wallala says the project also conveys the message that creativity is as important for living as the other essentials. She says the creative supermarket will also help the museum, which has seen a drop of more than 90% in income because of the pandemic. The shop is open for just 5 days, but artists expect heavy demand. In Hong Kong schools, robots are helping children with autism to live a better life. These robots are part of an educational program called Robot for Autism Behavioral Intervention, or RABI. It's designed for individuals with autism between 3 and 18 years of age and aims to make them more social. The robots engage the children with role-playing and verbal interaction, helping them to resolve issues such as conflicts and bullying. The program was developed by a Hong Kong professor, Catherine So. She says the program will help fight social deprivation of a certain group of people.
We would believe that RABI can help them to, you know, improve their social and behavioral skills, and in turn, enhancing their quality of their life. So to reduce being excluded in the society, and also help them to be included in the future.
Catherine says using robots also helps keep the program structured and predictable, as autistic people are hypersensitive to voices and facial expressions. The program she launched in 2015 has now been adopted in more than 20 nonprofit groups and public schools in the country. More than 1,200 children have used it so far.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked as
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
پیغمبر فرمود ایها الناس ان انفسکم مرهونتون به اعمال